Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Lydia Johnson. We're joined this week by Senate Ag Committee member Tina Smith from Minnesota, who joins us to talk about the reconciliation process, USDA staff reductions, and her decision not to run for re-election. But first, here's this week's headlines. The Trump administration continues to shrink the federal workforce. The latest step was to fire probationary workers who have been hired in the last 1 to 2 years. Several thousand in the Agriculture Department lost their jobs. Loan analysts in the Farm Service Agency field offices, ag scientists, bird flu researchers, and about 1,200 NRCS field staff were fired from the agency. Multiple termination notices viewed by AgriPulse include language saying the firings were based on performance, when in reality, the terminations extended to all probationary employees. Many employees said they had either received good performance reviews or no formal reviews at all. The Trump administration is preparing a plan for combating avian flu that will move away from depopulating the entire infected flock. The new plan will rely instead on biosecurity and medication to contain outbreaks, according to President Trump's top economic advisor, Kevin Hassett. The news follows an announcement that animal drug manufacturer Zoetis received USDA approval for a highly pathogenic avian influenza vaccine for use in chickens. USDA has been requiring the depopulation of infected flocks to control the spread of bird flu for years. The requirement is one factor that has contributed to skyrocketing egg prices. The Trump administration unveiled a reciprocal tariff plan that could open new markets for U.S. agriculture. In an executive order, President Trump directed the Department of Commerce and the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative to lead a study into non-reciprocal U.S. trade relationships and the potential use of reciprocal tariffs as a remedy. In a post on Truth Social, Trump explained the process, saying, "Whatever countries charge the United States of America, we will charge them. No more, no less." A former U.S. trade negotiator told AgriPulse, "If the reciprocal tariffs are implemented as described, it would reshape the post-World War II global trading system." Our guest this week is Tina Smith, a Democratic senator from Minnesota. She says the mass layoffs at USDA will affect rural America.
When we think about the impact that this has on rural America and farmers and ranchers and producers, it feels pretty intense to them. Here's just a couple of examples of what this means. The first thing is that these staff reductions at USDA, they seem to be just sort of willy-nilly without any thought or even any real understanding about what these different parts of USDA do. So, for example, you're seeing folks let go, probationary people let go, whose job it is to get make sure that farmers and producers can get technical assistance and can get hooked up with federal grants. These are probationary folks because they've been going through like a year or so of training, and just as they're about to be finished with that training, they're now being let go. I'm, of course, really concerned about the people who have been fired and then who has been rehired that are working on animal health. This is a huge issue with the avian flu, with avian influenza, but it's also a big deal for people who are thinking about African swine fever or foot and mouth disease and what it means for biosurveillance.
In addition to USDA, the U.S. Agency for International Development has been dismantled and international food aid has been stalled. In your opinion, Senator Smith, is it possible to move the Food for Peace program to USDA? And how would the Agriculture Department staff need to change to accommodate that program?
So the Food for Peace program and foreign food assistance is so important. This is not an example of waste, fraud, and abuse. This is an example of something that is good for America and it's good for the world. If you think just about the importance of making sure that kids around the world don't go hungry, this is what this program is designed to fix. And if you think about the need to create markets for American commodities and food products, this is what this program helps to support. So the pause in this program has, I'm very concerned, the reports are that it's caused so much food to just be wasted. And now the question is, where do we go from here? I'm just concerned about the commitment of this administration to continuing this going forward. And I hope that everybody will speak out about this because it's a very important part of our national security, as well as supporting the food and ag sector here at home.
Elon Musk and the Department of Government Efficiency are driving many of the personnel and budget cuts. Should farmers be concerned about DOGE's actions so far and what they could do going forward?
Yeah, well, so what I want to start by saying that I am all for figuring out how to make the federal government work more efficiently and more productively. And there's been a lot of talk about waste, fraud, and abuse. It's always very difficult to actually find that waste, fraud, and abuse, but wherever it is, we need to track it down and we need to end it. I'm not here fighting for the status quo. I want to make sure that things are working better for people. But the clear impression that I think many people are getting from this DOGE effort is that it isn't informed at all. It's not based on any understanding of how these agencies work or what services they're providing. And so it's kind of taking a sledgehammer approach when that is not called for. And this is what I'm hearing back from Minnesota producers as they're seeing the impacts of this. I mean, here's just one example. Elon Musk and DOGE did this massive freeze of all government grants. And you're thinking, well, how bad could that be? What does that really mean for people in the short run? Here's an example of a Minnesota farmer has a grant from the USDA through the EQIP program. Folks who know about EQIP know that you have to put the money out front first, and then you get reimbursed for a portion of it down the road. So this farmer did all that, had a contract with the USDA, only to come to find out that now they're saying, we're not going to pay any of that.
We'll be back with more from Senator Tina Smith right after this.
These are the farmers and ranchers who help build the America we depend on, and Farm Credit is here for them, supporting rural communities and agriculture with reliable, consistent credit and financial services. In good times and bad, we provide loans to farmers and ranchers, farmer-owned cooperatives, rural home buyers, agribusinesses, and rural infrastructure providers. We help agricultural producers feed the world. Learn more today.
Think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources.
This
is my sustainability story.
Welcome back. Republicans in the House and Senate disagree over how to enact President Trump's spending and tax priorities, including money for strengthening border security. We asked Senator Tina Smith how these budget plans could affect her constituents.
What I want to see happen is Democrats and Republicans coming together to pass a budget that meets the needs of rural America and farm country. And that's not happening right now. So we have to keep pushing for that and keep trying to make it work. I think what you're also talking about, I know what you're also talking about, is the work of the majority, the Republicans, to push through this big tax cuts bill. And we're working on that right now. And I'm pretty concerned about the direction that it is going and the impact that it will have on things that are really important to rural America, like health insurance and like nutrition assistance and like housing and like childcare. So we ought to be able to come up with a way of working on these issues in a bipartisan way. And I hope that we can get back to that point. We're not there right now.
Two Minnesotans, Senator Amy Klobuchar and Representative Angie Craig, are both now holding ranking member positions on the Senate and House Ag committees. How do you think the new Minnesota leadership will affect the chances for getting a new farm bill this year?
I'm really proud of Senator Klobuchar and Representative Craig and their leadership on the committee. And we also have a really strong representation from the upper Midwest. I'm hoping that we can have a fresh start. The need to pass a farm bill is really intense. Farmers are right now looking at their plans for the growing season, trying to make decisions about what to grow, locking in their inputs for the season. And they need to have the certainty that comes from knowing what the safety net programs are going to look like.
And finally, Senator Smith, you recently announced that you would not run for re-election in 2026. I'll give you the open mic here. What would you like your legacy to be from your time in office? And with so many qualified candidates from Minnesota, who are you endorsing to run for your seat?
Well, I told people last week that I'm not running for re-election because it was a totally personal decision. I thought a lot about with my husband, Archie, about what I wanted to do for the next 10 years. And we're grandparents and I want to be able to spend more time with my family that I love. When I first came to the Senate, I insisted that I have the chance to serve on the Ag Committee. And so it's been one of the great privileges to be able to do this job and to represent rural interests and the farmers, family farmers on the Ag Committee. Looking forward, I'm really proud of the work I've done to improve housing in rural communities, housing and childcare. I have led efforts on the Ag Committee to support and expand REAP, the Rural Energy for America program. I'll continue to work on those things, housing and childcare and supporting family farmers, making sure that there's a good safety net there for family farmers for the next 2 years.
Wonderful. Senator Smith, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
We'll be right back with our panel discussion. But first, Andrew Hunneke looks at the most recent farm income forecast in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
USDA's most recent farm income forecast projects farm profits will broadly increase this year after decreasing the previous 2 years. But that's mostly because of government payments that many farmers will get thanks to a bill Congress passed in December. The overall rise in net farm income also masks a lot of variability out in the country. Livestock and poultry producers continue to be in much better shape than farmers who grow crops like corn, soybeans, and cotton. This chart shows net farm income and net cash farm income adjusted for inflation from 2004 to the forecasted totals for 2025. Net cash farm income is the yellow line. It's a measure of farmers' cash flow. It's projected at just under $194 billion in 2025, an increase of more than $34 billion from last year. Net farm income is the blue line. It's a broader measure of profits. It's forecast at just over $180 billion in 2025, which would represent a gain of $41 billion from last year. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
Weeds, razor-thin margins, supply chain disruptions. American farmers need innovative solutions to tackle the threats that impact us all. Their yield is their livelihood and the food that feeds our families. That shouldn't be on the line. Which is why the Modern Ag Alliance advocates for access to essential crop protection tools like glyphosate to keep the future of farming in secure, hardworking hands. Get the facts and see what could be at risk.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Welcome back. We're joined for our panel today by Tara Smith from Tory Advisory Group and Mike Lavender from the National Sustainable Ag Coalition. Tara, we'll start with you. Both the House and Senate are working on budget resolutions, and the House Ag Committee would have to make big cuts to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. How do you think this affects the chances for passing a farm bill this year?
I mean, I think we have to put those cuts in context. It's going to make G.T. Thompson's job extremely difficult if we have a $230 billion cut hanging over us. That's 15% of the total farm bill budget. To put that in context, back in 2011, we were tasked with doing about a $25 billion cut. Our total cut by the time we passed a bill in 2014 was $23 billion, less than a 3% cut. And it took us 3 years to get a bill done. I just can't imagine how you go about getting a bill that cuts 15% of the overall budget. It's going to be a really, really difficult task. And I think is, quite frankly, a bit unrealistic in the grand scheme of things.
Senate Republicans want to make tax cuts permanent, many of which are important to agriculture. But in the House, some hardline conservatives are demanding as much as $2 trillion in spending to pay for tax cuts. How can the House and Senate reach a deal?
The House, as of yesterday, had the backing of President Trump to sort of do the one big, beautiful bill strategy. The Senate has decided that having a plan B is really important. And, I don't disagree with the Senate here. Having a plan B in Washington, D.C. these days is pretty darn important. The majority in the House is barely a majority. They have a lot of difficulty moving big packages. They have a lot of difficulty moving any packages some days of the week, just because of that really slim majority and some of the different factions you have within Republicans in the House. And so I don't think it's a bad idea to have a plan B in place.
And Mike, bringing you into the conversation here, USDA announced thousands of layoffs last week and the latest sweeping funding cuts by the Department of Government Efficiency. How will these cuts affect rural America, particularly FSA and NRCS offices that directly serve farmers?
I think the mission number one right now is really getting a better understanding of the scope and specific location of the staff firings. To some degree, this was expected as DOGE entered USDA. It was clear that firings were going to happen. But I think where the rubber meets the road is what specific offices have these firings taken place from? And then taking a step back, we know well that there is an ongoing funding freeze at the Department of Agriculture, whether that's related to the generational investments and conservation spending that are incredibly popular, or related to the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Executive Order. So I think taken together, the staff firings and the ongoing funding freeze are creating a tremendous amount of uncertainty, confusion, and I'd say chaos. Certainly from the farmers that we've spoken to, both within the NSAC membership and outside of it, there's anger. And I think when staff firings in the order of magnitude that's being reported and thousands of individuals, it's hard to see how that doesn't lead to folks going to their local FSA office or their local NRCS office. And are the doors unlocked? If they're open, how long do folks have to wait in line for a service that used to come much more quickly?
We'll be back with more of our panel discussion right after this.
I think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources. This
is my sustainability story.
Weeds, razor-thin margins, supply chain disruptions. American farmers need innovative solutions to tackle the threats that impact us all. Their yield is their livelihood and the food that feeds our families. That shouldn't be on the line. Which is why the Modern Ag Alliance advocates for access to essential crop protection tools like glyphosate to keep the future of farming in secure, hardworking hands. Get the facts and see what could be at risk.
The Trump administration is abolishing programs across the board that deal with underserved and minority farmers. We asked Mike Lavender about the impact of that decision and if he thinks Congress should step in.
Many of these programs that are being paused or where we're seeing contract terminations, right? These are congressionally mandated and funded programs. So oftentimes in bipartisan farm bills. And so I think there's absolutely a role for Congress to step in and say, that's not the role of the executive branch. Obviously the executive branch plays an important role in setting policy, but Congress passes the laws and provides funding. So I think that's one important piece. And look, you mentioned it on the Diversity, Equity, Inclusion Executive Order. We're seeing USDA terminate contracts and go back on its legal word and not honoring those contracts. We're also seeing the same with the conservation investments through the Conservation Stewardship Program, Environmental Quality Incentives Program, where payments continue to be paused despite farmers holding a lawful legal contract. So I think a big piece of this is really USDA needs to honor its legal commitments and release the funding for those contracts.
And Tara, how do you see the USDA staffing cuts and federal aid freezes impacting USDA's ability to administer producer services going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's yet to be seen. I think we have to keep in mind that Secretary Rollins has been in her job less than a week. probably by the time this airs. While I worry about DOGE, while I worry about people who don't understand the programs, their impact on the countryside, what they do for things like food safety, coming in with an axe and just sort of willy-nilly cutting different programs, I have a lot of faith and trust in Secretary Rollins, and that she's going to be able to moderate some of those DOGE desires, if you will, and make sure that those cuts are in smart places, places that aren't going to impact food safety, places that aren't going to impact farmers on the ground in a significant way.
I'd like to wrap up with a question for both of you on the Farm Bill. With all the actions from the Trump administration and budget reconciliation proposed cuts to both the House and Senate Ag Committee's budgets, what are the odds a farm bill passes this year, and what do you foresee as the major issues that will need to be resolved for that to happen?
Getting a farm bill done, any farm bill done, even under the best of circumstances, is a challenge, right? To get to 218 in the House and to 60 in the Senate. I think we're looking at a year where Congress is interested and wants to get a farm bill done. I think we're seeing the right messages from Senator Bozeman, Congressman Thompson, and the ranking members on both sides of the House and Senate Agriculture Committees. And that is a good sign early in this year. But I think we're going to have to see how budget reconciliation plays out. What we do know is that a farm bill has to be bipartisan, right? It's much of the same story as last year. A farm bill has to be bipartisan. And I think if we're operating under that assumption, then we know what a farm bill has to look like to one degree or another, right? There are certain red lines that can't be crossed.
Yeah, I think the big question mark to me for getting a farm bill done this year is really looking at reconciliation. And what does that mean? Is it a $230 billion cut we've got looming over the process? Is it something more reasonable, something more doable that Four Corners can agree on? But to me, that's going to be the biggest question mark in terms of whether we get a bill done. I will say that I recently had the opportunity to see all Four Corners together on a panel discussing a lot of different topics, but Farm Bill included. I was really, really heartened by sort of the new energy around this group of the new four. They seemed to have a lot of good banter amongst them, a lot of good discussion. It was just so much more positive than I think we've seen the last couple of years.
We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, Andrew Hunneke has a look at the new members of the House Ag Committee in this week's Map It Out.
There are 14 new members of the House Ag Committee in the 119th Congress. Six are Republican and eight are Democrats. This map shows the states represented by each of the new members. The six Republicans include Washington Congressman Dan Newhouse, who's starting his second stint on the committee. He's also serving on the Appropriations Committee. The other members are all first-term members. They include Pennsylvania's Rob Bresnahan, North Carolina's Mark Harris, Indiana's Mark Messmer, Ohio's David Taylor, and Wisconsin's Tony Weed. All eight Democratic members will be serving their first term on the committee. Two represent New York, Josh Riley and John Mannion. Other new members include California's Adam Gray, Michigan's Kristen McDonald Rivett, Alabama's Shamari Figures, Virginia's Eugene Vindman, Maryland's April McLean Delaney, and Michigan's Sri Tanadar. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
Elevate your game and set your sights on Denver for the 2025 Commodity Classic. With technology that moves faster than fluctuating markets and information as important as a million-dollar rain, Commodity Classic is designed for growers of all kinds, where you'll broaden your horizons as you improve yield and ROI one bushel at a time. Take your operation to new heights and join us for Elevating Excellence in Agriculture, March 2nd through 4th in Denver. Learn more at commodityclassic.com.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Thanks for joining us on this week's AgriPulse Newsmakers. Here's what's on the horizon for next week. There's still time to register for our annual Ag and Food Policy Summit on March 17th. We have a full agenda set, including discussions about what's at stake for taxes, trade, and technology in the upcoming year. Both the House and Senate will be in session next week. State Agriculture Department leaders from across the country will gather in Washington, D.C. for the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture annual meeting. On Thursday and Friday, our team will bring you coverage from the USDA Ag Outlook Forum on the latest economic insights for farm country. We'll continue to follow all of this and more on our website at agripulse.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is agripulse.com.